Hello, and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 350. Damn it! Hello? I'm tired, and I'm sick. I've already worked 50 hours
this
week.
It's the podcast, people.
I've already worked... At least I know the name of the show!
It's 4. It's 4:54.
4:54. I'm tired.
Yeah.
I want to go home.
Where are you recording this from?
I don't want to talk about it.
Sweet justification right here for me.
I'm sick, by the way.
Poetic justice.
So if at
John,
some point,
John has become increasingly the obvious choice to sub for you when the time comes.
You know, we had somebody on Twitter asking if I could host a show. So,
it's gonna happen.
There's
I'm
at least,
fully behind
there's
it.
There's at least one sick bastard out there.
Okay, me and the could make it too. I'm
pause.
I'm
the
fully
question.
On
the question here is: can you host a show? I would say definitively the answer is no. Will you host a show? Probably.
I think I've seen two incredibly competent hosts enough to at least mimic their incompetence.
Carl's not hosted in a long time, John. What are you talking about? Mm.
So I'm behind him. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. You think I planned this ahead of time?
This is true.
A minute and a half, and I've already zoned out.
Yep.
Mission accomplished. Then yeah. let's do this. Hi, Guillaume.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going all right. I'm kind of sick, but how are you doing?
I'm tired too. So this is going to be a great podcast.
Get excited, Mr. Greg Leahy, master of just complete desire to see this thing burst into flames. How are you?
I've never been tired during this.
And then, master of bursting this thing into flames, Mr. John Lindemann, how are you?
I am torching as usual.
I'm going to leave that alone.
Flame on, James. Flame on.
Thank you, Johnny. But, it's new business. And I'm actually going to lead off new business this week because I have Nintendo's tentpole title for making a ton of money off the backs of small children, Yo-Kai Watch on 3DS. So, just to give a little bit of history here, if you have never listened to the show before and listened to us just gawk in amazement at the numbers that Yo-Kai Watch was pulling when this game and its three sequels that are all Yo-Kai Watch 2, I believe there's three versions of Yo-Kai Watch 2 because fuck you, Level 5. When it came out, the numbers it was pulling down in Japan, this game sold a lot of copies in Japan. The toys sold a lot of units, and the TV show was really highly rated. And all kinds of dumb things like the little tokens that you could buy, the friend coins or whatever. This game made Level 5 a lot of money. However, Level 5, lacking a proper international division, has had to rely on the help of friends to localize this whole franchise.
Weren't they looking to expand in North America like 6 years ago?
They sure were. Level 5 International North America and Level 5 International Europe, I believe, are essentially acting as the intermediaries as the various companies in charge of localizing this product sort of do their business. Hmm. So one company is doing the anime, which has been on Disney XD for about 2 months now. Nintendo did the game internally. And then Hasbro, I believe, is doing the toy line. So they had to kind of bring three companies together to make this work. So they're sort of acting as the Pokemon company role was playing the intermediary. But of course, that means they're leaving some money on the table. And here's the thing. This game is often compared to Pokemon. And I understand why. You collect monsters, you battle them, but it's not really Pokemon. It's not Pokemon at all, actually. Hmm. It's really, what's the best way of describing it? It's really Inazuma 11 Megami Tensei.
Okay. So do you like make deals with a yokai and
yes.
Okay. You tell them which part of you is the tastiest and
kinda. I mean, so here's how it works. It's Inazuma 11 World. Like, it's the world is set up the same. It looks a lot nicer because it's all 3D and you and your character is 3D and you can pivot the camera. And it actually looks really pretty. It really makes the Pokemon 3DS games look like absolute garbage. Also, it runs well, so good job, Nintendo.
Huh.
Or, well, I guess that's not really Nintendo's fault. That goes on creatures. But it also, but yeah, you go through the world and it's episodic in the same way Inazuma 11 is. You know, the world is kind of structured the same way where it's not huge, but it's dense. And you're basically traveling through town. Unlike that game, though, there's no map where you hop around. You actually travel from place to place on your bike. So you just ride there. You know, there's lots of quests that you could pick up from people in the world. It even uses the same dumb blue flags to indicate quests. So, I mean, this is a very level 5 game. But when you meet yokai, which you do by using the yokai watch, a titular device that lets you see them, which, by the way, yokai are not ghosts. They are spirits who cause people to do strange things and cause weird things to happen. For example, there's one that makes you say no to any request you get from anyone else in, quote, an obnoxious way. So essentially, it possesses you.
Sounds satanic.
A little bit. So you essentially use the watch to find them when the sensor starts beeping that you're near one. Sometimes they're NPCs in the world. Sometimes they're hiding on trees and stuff. There's no random battles. You don't drive through bushes to get attacked by yokai. There are some caves and some back alleys where they're actually on the map and they're running around and you can avoid them or you can engage them in battle. But you don't capture anything. You form a friendship with them in Shin Megami Tensei style. Primarily, the game describes it by, before the fight starts, you throw food at them. And if they like that food, they're more likely to join you. If they don't like that food, they probably aren't going to join you at all. It doesn't, and it's not a given, like 100% that it's going to happen. It just tips the odds more in your favor if you give them food they like. You don't even necessarily need to give them food at all. Sometimes you just beat them really, really hard and they go like, wow, you're really strong. I want to be your friend. And they give you a friend token. And then if you're using, and you carry around 6 into battle with you at any time, and those are the ones, essentially those, that's how you switch them out. You move one to the other. There's even like merging of these things, Shin Megami Tensei style. So yeah, it's kind of weird that it's like that. And it's not like Pokemon where they're just monsters that have power. Like there's kind of weird Japanese mythos wrapped around a lot of them. A lot of them are basically, you know, items that have become sentient spirits, which is kind of a piece of Japanese mythology. I think it's like if an item lives to be 100 years old, it can become a spirit. Weird stuff like that. That all sort of wraps up, and everything is kind of a pun in ways that make a lot of Pokemon's puns look bad. It's a weird and irreverent game. A lot of the quests are exceedingly irrelevant. To give you an idea of what we're talking about here, there is an enemy that is a sword, a samurai sword, that's tip is broken off and is flaccid. So it's just sort of flapping around. And its name is simply Katana. As in, nah, I'm not gonna cut you. Because I'm lazy. And that's its character trait. It's a lazy sword. It's like this game is complete just insanity. And I kind of dig it. I kind of dig this. I like the level 5 game, even though I see the artifice everywhere. Like I played Inazuma 11 twice. I get it. And this game is that game, but without soccer, with instead ghost battling, which is kind of a weird thing to drop on top of it, but it works. And I guess you aren't surprised that it works. I mean, it's a lot like the robot fighting game I played a few weeks ago. But that game has no character. Like, there's no personality to that game whatsoever, so I don't even remember its name.
Like, Little Battlers.
Yeah, Little Battlers Experience. this game is drowning in its own personality. There's a character called Riff Raff who has a pompadour and like a leather suit, and he walks around like Japanese stereotypical anime punk. And then he says punk things to you when you fight him, and if you beat him up, he says things like, "Yeah, you weren't that strong. I wasn't trying too hard." And if you merge him with the series mascot, Jibanyan, which is that cute red cat you see associated with the franchise, he turns into a punk version of that. So he grows a pompadour and turns purple and gets sunglasses. This game is much more self-aware than any Pokemon title could ever possibly be. Possibly more self-aware than any Nintendo title could be. And for that reason, I think alone, I kind of dig it. Like, I get what the series is doing. It's dumb in the right way to be dumb. There's definitely a lot of repetition going on. But, you know, the episodes are usually pretty short. The quests are not that interesting. Sometimes you get one that are more interesting than others. Sometimes it's just, hey, kill three of these things. Sometimes it's, can you get me this item? Sometimes it's they're being possessed by something and you have to find what's possessing them, and then you get a little story sequence with the thing possessing it. It's not, gameplay wise, it's not great, but it's engaging enough for what it is. I will say I now understand why the franchise went ballistic in Japan, because, excuse me, because when I was watching, or I was playing this game and I was flipping through channels, I happened across the show also on TV and I stopped. And I said, all right, well, let's see what this is. And this is the most completely insane thing I have ever watched on television. Like, that's the bar this is at. This is it.
the knives being sold at midnight doesn't count.
No. to pull equivalencies here that, like, four people will get, this is somewhere in the territory of Bobobo levels of just complete utter nonsense. This is like Pokemon meets Cromartie High School levels of complete insanity. I can't... Like, and that's a show where Freddie Mercury was a character as a silent high school student that rode a bull around, a horse, excuse me. Like, that's the levels of just complete fucking lunacy we're dealing with. And like, I get it. Like, it's so deep in that franchise of just being dumb and silly and not caring that it's okay. Like the being a good example of the level 5 genre with a particularly unengaging battle system. Like there's some intricacy to it, but it's not very active. The characters go and fight on their own. You can occasionally trigger special attacks by pressing a button on them when their meter is full and then playing a little mini game on the touchscreen. But by and large, you're mostly spectating. You're managing. So you're swapping. So you have three out at any one time. So you're swapping them out as you go, but you're mostly just kind of to use a football term, a game manager. So, you know, you would think there wouldn't be much there, but it actually works pretty well because you're not having to constantly just do the same stuff. It's a lot of really short sequences. The fact that it actually is kind of samey doesn't matter. So, yeah, I'm kind of not upset that I'm playing this game. Like, I felt like I bought it as part of that, like, buy two, get one free deal. I was like, well, somebody on the show ought to talk about it. And our attempt to have somebody on fell through. But
what, so you didn't think I was going to rush out and buy it, James?
No, I didn't, John. I thought your pre-order must have fallen through or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
No pre-PAX East peer pressure. Goodness sake, that was an alliteration.
Yeah, that was brutal. But, like, It's not Pokemon. And I think people who talked about, like, oh, this is the Pokemon killer, don't understand what makes that game work versus this game. Like, there's so much about the metagame, about evolving and training and building the right team. Whereas this game, it's really just, I don't know, I like these six. Let's put them together. If I put these two next to each other, they get a stat boost. Like, there's not that much to it. And the game will even do it for you if you ask it to. It's like, here's your best hand.
So
go nuts.
So it's dumbed down Pokemon.
In a lot of ways, yeah. Like, it's not about the battling.
Yeah.
And in fact, in the show, having now seen like two or three episodes, they frequently get ready to battle and then just idiocy happens and they don't do it. Mm-hmm. Like, they'll get ready to fight and then that creature I was talking about that makes you say no in a particularly obnoxious way tells all of the hero's characters no, and they're like, no, I'm not going to fight. And so that entire sequence just resolves by them playing opposite day. Like, it's, combat is almost tertiary to what this game is. So, I get it. The only time it really has any strategy are the boss battles, in which it has that Pokemon really doesn't. So, in that case, there's usually little puzzles in the boss. Like, you have to hit them in the eye so they cover their eyes and expose their weak point, kind of punch-out style. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, it's just kind of a fun little TV-on game. That, you know, I've put 10 hours in, but I'd probably say it was the single thing I was doing maybe less than an hour. So, I mean, I get it. This game has potential to sell a ton of copies and be brand marketing empire in Europe and North America too. We don't have any numbers yet on how it's doing. A friend of the show, Seren, actually did an interview with Nintendo where they talked about how they think this is going to be it for them. This is going to make big numbers.
But now, do you think this game is aimed? I mean, obviously, it's aimed at children, But do you think it has that crossover appeal with adults that Pokemon has?
I think the property does, and I'll explain why. So one of the episodes I've seen now, they meet a character, or they meet a ghost who, or yokai, excuse me, God, I'm gonna get yelled at by the branding people, whose way of enchanting people is to make them spend money on useless crap. Like, that's what he does.
How ironic.
And the,
you did say it was self-aware.
Yep. It is self-aware. And the party is going to the mall to buy a video game that's name is very similar to Yo-Kai Watch 2.
Yeah. Is there like a cat home involved with that? Just
there might be.
Asking
there might
for
be.
A friend.
So in the process of trying to buy this game, one of them buys a giant tuna. Another one buys a totem pole. One of them buys a straw that can be used by four people at one time. Another one buys deluxe toilet paper that comes with a toilet paper folding device. And eventually they get around to trying to talk this yokai down from trying to make them spend their money. And he immediately responds, "What are you, a communist?"
Well, you know, you got to introduce kids to that concept early.
And then he starts quoting Wall Street, the movie.
That's pretty funny.
And he ends his soliloquy with a reference to trickle-down economics and greed is good.
Of course.
Like,
that's pretty good.
This thing is super self-aware, and in ways sometimes where I look at it going like, did you really just do that? What's wrong
in
with
this,
you?
In this game?
In this game or in this TV show that's airing on a Disney channel between like a Mickey show and like Digimon? What are you doing?
Yeah. I oftentimes feel stuff like that is slipped in there by, you know, somebody just gets bored and I'm like, I'm so tired of dumbing this stuff down. And they throw in like an adult joke. Just to keep themselves occupied.
I remember the Earthworm Jim cartoon had references to Rush Limbaugh that I didn't get for years later.
But it's like, it's all, like, for the TV show especially, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Like, constant. So, like, it's almost so manic that I kind of want to just sit there and just marathon it. Like, because it's just so dumb. But even in the game where there's less of it, there's a lot less of it, it still pops up. And it's part of... It's just part of the DNA of the franchise, which I think gives it a different kind of crossover appeal than Pokemon. Pokemon's crossover appeal is that it's super approachable unless you don't want it to be. Unless you want it to be this really overwrought sort of building the perfect, you know, creature battling team that will cause animal decimation. Whereas in this one, the crossover appeal is really that it's just slipping in this really ridiculous, dumb stuff that maybe a kid doesn't really get bothered by, but the fact that your character's response to meeting his first yokai, which is a ghost who's also taken on the role of his butler, is to basically tell him, "That's great, go away, I'm gonna go look for bugs." It's like, what is this game doing? And I kind of appreciate that in a weird way. So I'm gonna keep pushing through this one. It's a neat enough game that I'm interested in continuing and seeing what it's got. I don't know how long it is. I know I'm never gonna bother to collect all the yokai because it's just too erratic when they join you and when they don't. So, you know, it's nice that all the items in the game serve the dual purpose of forging a bond and healing items, but it would be nicer if I had a little bit more deterministic control over that. But I think it's a neat game, especially because there's no Pokemon game coming out. If you're itching, like, you can try it. You know, if you like Shin Megami Tensei, but you like kind of weird goofiness, or you like level 5 stuff, yeah, I mean, this game is the level 5-iest game I've played yet. So, yeah, I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised. So, John.
I do. I have a little bit of stuff. I've been... you know, a little bit of old, a little bit of new. The new stuff I've been playing, of course, you know, it's first-person shooter season, so opting out of Black Ops 3, I don't really care about that at the moment. Probably won't for a while. But
is that the first Black Ops you've opted out of in a while, or did you opt out of the last one? I can't remember.
No, I got Advanced Warfare. I got it well after the fact, though. So
okay.
I've kind of drifted away. There's only so many first-person shooters a man can have in his life, James. It's one thing I've learned. And
I only need one.
And that first-person shooter for me right now is Halo 5. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. Again, I say this with every Halo game. If you don't like Halo, it's not going to make you fall in love with Halo. It's very much a Halo game.
Oh, guess what, John? I've got bad news. I've never played a Halo game. Explain it to me.
Oh, well.
I'm just kidding. I'm not kidding about the not having played Halo bit. I'm just kidding about the
explain
Halo.
As you would a child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well,
No.
Okay. Well,
no,
it's a first person shooter, Greg.
It's a ninja game. You're trying to kill a shogun. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah.
It's a puzzle game.
It's a monster battling game. John, if you feel like you can you give me a quick summary of when you say it's a Halo game? What makes a Halo game different? Because, I mean, there are members of our audience who have not played a Halo game. I haven't played one since 3, so...
Well, okay, so with Halo 5, I played through the campaign on Legendary, and the way the multiplayer, the online multiplayer, is now split up, as they split it into kind of two main components. They split it into, like, your typical arena mode, which is, like, deathmatch and capture the flag and that kind of stuff, and then they have the new Warzone mode, which is kind of a sandboxy sort of mode where... You have to capture points on a map, and for your team, and you have to capture 3 points and then destroy the other team's core, right? And I think it's 24 player battles. It's large on large maps with lots of players, and the way they've done that now, they've introduced a new system called the REC system, REQ, and what it is it's kind of, it lends itself, it's microtransactions. So, what you can do is in these Warzone modes, you can't use these in arena mode. They've kept that pure, but in Warzone mode, they have you can buy kind of card packs, and what you can do is in the Warzone mode, you can use them to, you can kind of spend cards to get better guns, get better vehicles, and stuff like that. So now, of course, the catch is that leads to the question, well, does that make maybe one team that has better cards than the other team overpowered? While that is at times true, bear in mind that because it's kind of a sandbox thing, you can take vehicles from the other team. And then when people die, if they have a really good gun, well, their good gun is sitting there and you can just pick it up and use it against the other team. So it's almost like these cards allow you to throw more stuff into the sandbox. So I mean, what makes a Halo game a Halo game? I think it's more probably about kind of like the feel of the game more than anything else. I like the way that this one feels. And of course, you know, there's like kind of like the lore and the enemies and all that kind of stuff. And this one continues the story of Cortana. Cortana is kind of, you know, she was going to die and now she's kind of, you know, gone rogue, and I don't want to spoil anything, but that's sort of like what the deal is. And so you kind of figure out the whole goal of this game is to kind of, you know, you guide Master Chief, and they've introduced, like, Master Chief, it's squad-based. So that's what's very different about this as opposed to even other Halos, previous Halos. It's a squad-based shooter, more like Gears of War. So you have your squad of four, and what they do story-wise is the way it's set up is that, you know, Master Chief has gone off to find Cortana. She's, you know, gone off to God knows where. You have to find her. And in the meantime, you have another squad of four led by Spartan Locke, who is this character that they introduced, I think, in the last Halo. And his fire team of four has to find Master Chief's fire team of four. So it's this kind of, you know, this cat and mouse chase kind of thing. You know, they go on, all kinds of fantastical stuff happens, and so they kind of go back and forth in the campaign, like with each chapter, it's like, this is, you know, kind of Master Chief's chapter, and then they switch back over to Spartan Locke, and eventually they kind of meet up at the end, and, you know, things happen, space drama, all that kind of stuff. But what makes this game very different is sort of like the Gears of War stuff I kind of talked about, where you can control your three AI. I mean, and the thing is, people can also drop in. So you can have up to four people playing co-op at once. I haven't played co-op with anybody, but you can have up to four people playing co-op at once through the campaign, which is pretty cool. But when you're playing solo, it's you and three AI people, your three AI squad mates. And the AI is just fucking abysmal. It is terrible. You have to babysit them the entire campaign. And it's not that bad when you're playing on, you know, when you're playing through it on, you know, normal or heroic, but man, it is tough and you have to play through it on Legendary because they are terrible. Because they're not only do they, I mean, their pathing is awful. So what will happen is that what the kind of the, what the advantage that they give you is that they can come in and revive you if you get killed. And of course, when you're playing it, when it's, you know, when the enemies are really powerful, you get killed a lot, right? You can pretty much, even the weakest enemy can pretty much kill you in 3 shots. So you go down quite a bit because, you know, there's a lot of enemies, a lot of firefights, and a lot of times you're just, you're poking your head out from under, from behind cover. But the problem is when you call, to get revived, they will stop what they're doing and they will literally just walk a beeline right towards you.
Nice.
And it gets to be like a comedy routine because you'll watch, I mean, you can go through all three of them. You'll call to get revived. One of them will walk over right in front of, so I mean, even if you're hiding behind a wall, they won't loop back around you and do the sort of smart thing and, you know, loop back around you, go through cover and then come back behind you and res you. They will literally walk right in front of all of the enemies that are shooting at you that just killed you and they will get killed. And then you call the next guy over and then he'll get killed. Call the next guy over.
Do you know going in? Like, do you look at the situation and go, oh, they're all going to die?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yep. I mean, you learn to not rely on them at all. And it was funny because I actually streamed it for a while. I was playing through and one guy that just happened to hop on, he said, hey, you know, don't forget, because I got to the point where I didn't even rely on them. Like, I would pretty much, I would honestly either tell them to, like, stay behind me and just to get them out of the way, or I would have them, or because you can point them at an enemy and say, take out this enemy. And I would pretty much send them in knowing that they were just going to all get killed. So you wind up having to manage them and kind of control them and just keep them out of your hair more than anything else, more than actually having them help you. They help you very occasionally, but I would say probably about 80% of the time they just get killed and they're just cannon fodder. So,
now, John, can you bark orders to them with Kinect?
No, I don't think you can, actually.
Could you at least just tell them how much they suck with Kinect?
What's Kinect?
That's exactly it. You know, it's funny because I don't think that's an option. And in fact, I haven't even thought about doing anything Kinect like that. Like
just doing the hand signals, you know, like you've written like special ops.
Oh, God.
No,
had that idea at one point before.
Oh, no,
because
for the first Kinect, when they had Mass Effect 3 on the E3 stage, they had all those stupid hand gestures.
Oh, did they? Yeah. I apologize.
It's the best video I've ever seen from an E3.
But
that was the same E3 as the Skittles, and this is worse than the Skittles.
Well, I mean, that's how far Kinect is out of the picture. I mean, this is the biggest game on Xbox One by far, and Kinect it's not even a factor. I mean, it's not even used as far as I know. If it is,
I assume it would drain resources away from the performance of the game, so.
Yep.
Even if they had ideas at this point, it's probably best to just leave that out.
Yeah. So the AI is terrible, and I mean, it gets frustrating because, you know, when you really need help and you just need them to not be idiots, they're complete idiots. So,
like the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, okay, guys, it's like,
you know, who's the one sentient person out of the four in that analogy, James?
None of the above.
Yeah. So
the listener.
So yep, that's the AI is terrible and you have to manage
it. But John, let's talk about the multiplayer, since that's what the appeal of this game is for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the multiplayer because I've played Advanced Warfare. I haven't played Black Ops 3, but Black Ops 3 is it's really fast. When you play Black Ops 3, even within that franchise, Black Ops 3 plays really fast compared to other games such as Ghosts and even some of the Modern Warfare titles, I think.
I know Advanced Warfare, that was this big thing, was like, it's way faster now.
Well, yeah, but Black Ops 3 usually even takes that up a notch. Well, with Advanced Warfare, its big appeal was going, you know, kind of the, like, jumping. It's a very vertical game. I don't really know too much about Black Ops 3. I haven't played it. But Halo is, when I played the beta of Halo 5, I wasn't too impressed by it. It just felt kind of weird. It didn't really feel, because the thing is, like, Halo games typically, your characters have a lot of weight to them. Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense. They're wearing armor.
Yeah, yeah. So it kind of, it's not like, it, you know, you're not jumping around and doing all that kind of stuff. With Halo 5, I like it because while you can boost in the air, so you can jump up in the air and you can boost in any direction, which is pretty cool, but just a single boost. So it has that, it adds that extra element, but it doesn't go overboard with it. It's kind of controlled. And you can, since you can boost in any direction, you can use it, to evade attacks pretty effectively from wherever they're coming from. Like,
you can't really abuse it.
Yeah, you can't abuse it. So in the campaign, what I found useful was, even if something jumped up behind me, I would turn around and see it and I could immediately boost away from it. So it's useful and stuff like that. And I mean, that's useful in arena too, because, you know, somebody, instead of getting that killing blow in on you, you can boost away from them and, you know, kind of shoot them and put some space in between you and whoever's trying to kill you. So it's kind of neat that way. And they also, the thing that I think is kind of underrated is the clambering in it. You can pretty much, whenever you're near a ledge, you can press A and you'll climb up onto the ledge. But you can do that pretty much anywhere. So it's different than, you know, other first-person shooters I've played where there's kind of like official places that you can climb
up. Right, they're like highlighted red.
Kind of, yeah. Like, you kind of know, like, oh, that ledge I can climb up on, but this one I can't. So,
well, I'm thinking like Mirror's Edge style, where like they're just highlighted.
Yeah, like it's very, very obvious what you can and cannot do. But it's a little bit more. It's, you know, you have a little bit more leeway. Pretty much any kind of edge, whether it's a rock, whether it's an actual platform, you can climb up on it. So in the campaign, you can climb
whether
up
it's
on
a hot
stuff.
Take.
Yeah, I mean, you can climb up on stuff that you would not normally think that you could climb up on, but it'll let you do it. So, and that carries over to the online as well. So
can you tell your bots to climb up stuff?
Oh, no. God, I wish you could. I wish you could just tell them to jump off a cliff. I mean, really, there were times in that game where I was like, I just wish I could turn them off entirely, because they were completely useless.
Have you ever contemplated shooting them?
Yeah, and they actually, you can't, that's the one great thing is, I didn't do this enough, but you can shoot them. So, I mean, you can shoot them and they'll die. They come
friendly
back.
Friendly fire is great, John Lindemann.
Yeah, it's so useful sometimes because, well, I mean, they'll jump right in front of you. So, if, I mean, you could be firing something really powerful at an enemy, they'll jump right in front of it and you'll kill them. You'll be like, thank God, get out of here. So, yeah, but I wish they would really, you know, I had to laugh because the first thing I said was, oh man, look at that terrible AI pathing. That must be the power of the cloud.
Oh.
But yeah, so it's,
now you're really just slamming I can't even remember the name, Titanfall.
Yeah, that's you know, it's funny you say that, because this game does remind me, especially Warzone, it reminds me a little bit of Titanfall, because you do have NPC, like one of the kind of things they sprinkle in there, like the Warzone games, they're the first team up to 1,000 points, or if you destroy the other team's core. And they actually do have NPCs in there. So you'll have like kind of NPC bosses that get dropped in for like, you know, for like extra points. And they have around each base, they have the NPC Marines that you can also kill for a small amount of points. And then the NPC bosses that they drop in, I think you get 150 points for them, but you get a large point award.
So you're telling me it's Dota. You just described Dota. You realize that, right?
I'm telling you it's Tetris.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, Halo 5, Tetris. John, what else you got? Anything else, or do you want to move on?
We can move on. I mean, I have other stuff, but not really too relevant.
Well, yeah, I want to hear about BlizzCon at some point. So,
yeah,
we will. Guillaume.
Yeah. Well,
I need you to tell me how many limbs you have right now.
Oh boy. Well, let me start first, because I played a bunch of games that are relevant, but two of them kind of suck. So let's get them out of the way right now. I played Contra Advance, which came out on the Wii U. It's one of the Game Boy Advance games that came out in the Virtual Console. Yeah. It's not a very good version at all of Contra 3. I don't know, I should have verified first, but as soon as I read that this version of the game replaced the top-down Mode 7 levels of Contra 3 with hardcore levels from the Genesis, well, from the, you know, the Genesis game.
From Contra Hardcore, yeah.
Exactly, yes. I was like, oh, really? Well,
it does sound probably quite appealing, doesn't it? I've almost fallen into this trap.
Yeah, so I downloaded the game, and then I've made a huge mistake, because it's just not a very good version. Initially I thought, wow, I'm way worse at Contra than I thought I was. And usually that's the case. Like, every time I pick up a Contra game, I'm always slightly worse than I remember being. But in this case, it's not entirely my fault.
The game's worse than you remember it being, because
exactly.
It is worse.
It is worse because the sprites are basically...
Haven't they taken away like something about the two guns or something? Like,
between two guns, and your sprite takes up too much space in the screen.
Yeah, I mean, that is a kind of thing that you expect with a GBA, SNES to GBA thing, like
sure,
Yoshi's Island.
But
some of the other stuff is really weird.
Yeah, they didn't compensate for the lack of screen real estate, though. So, like, shots come at you very fast, and so you die very quickly.
I almost equate that more with the NES to Game Boy Color ports, because that case, there were dozens of those games where it was just like, hey, this enemy off screen's killing you, have fun.
Well, yeah, it wasn't so bad in the Dragon Quest port, but sure. In a Contra game, like, reflexes are everything, and if you don't see what's
that's
coming...
True.
It's really, really hard. And so in this case, like, the second level, which is apparently a hardcore, Contra hardcore level.
Yeah, because the second level originally was one of those top-down jobs.
Right. So you have this giant robot as a mid-boss that steps on you. And if there's a way to avoid him, I haven't found it. Like, I try jumping back or running back, or you can't really fit between its legs when it advances, and I don't know, like, kill me every time. So,
because the thing is that, I mean, if they really are just like those Mega Drive levels, then that you've got the same problem, haven't you, with the resolution not being a good match. I mean, Super Ghouls and Ghosts for the GBA, which is also on the Virtual Console,
it is.
You know, sort of duplicative Virtual
Console.
Yeah,
the Super
releases.
Nintendo version and the Game Boy Advance version both are.
Yeah, so this is sort of a trend for whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you got the Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, a GBA game today. So, it is a trend. But anyway, with Ghouls and Ghosts, they have sort of additional levels in that game that are based on other games in the series, you know, levels from like the Ghosts and Goblins, that kind of thing. But they are newish, you know, they're not just like ripped out of it and then, you know, they're kind of redesigned for that, for the GBA, you know, so it actually gave it some original content, new bosses, and presumably adapted it for the resolution a bit. So it actually makes that version a bit less redundant than this one of Contra 3. So it just seems like they didn't, you know, they had the same idea, they just didn't execute it nearly as well.
Right. So, and it was an early GBA game, so I guess they...
Yeah,
it was
that kind of gold rush, if you want to call it that, of like, oh, we could just put Super Nintendo games on this thing.
Even after Nintendo kind of, they claimed to... I don't know, where did I read that? Did Nintendo claim that they put only two face buttons on the GBA to prevent Super NES ports?
Is that right? I heard that one.
I read that somewhere, but it's probably wrong. That
yeah, I mean,
stupid.
They made sure nobody did that by porting NES games themselves.
Right.
They ported NES games. They had the good sense to go with
the
Mario
games. IGN boards have led me astray.
Super Mario World, though, being a, you know, somewhat significant exception to that.
not a good game. And another not good game that I played is Snoopy's Grand Adventure on the Wii U. Mm. I pre-ordered this game seeing a trailer like a fool. Because the trailer looked okay, and I was like, oh, a two-player co-op platformer. I'm going to need one. I'm going to need one after I finish Yoshi's Woolly World. And so I played it, and it's not very good.
I'm going to need one, so I should buy a bad one so I never need one again.
Mm-hmm. Well, lesson learned. The co-op stuff is... It's barely a two-player game. I would say that the second player has less interesting things to do than in Super Mario Galaxy.
Oh, no.
You seem to activate platforms that activate by themselves anyway. So it's not very good. And so, one of the good games I played the PC version of Octodad. So that explains your question earlier.
It does.
I have four limbs. I'm totally not a, you know,
cephalopod.
No, trying to pass as a human. So yeah, this game, it's a really, really funny game. Kind of based around the idea of, you've got many of these types of games. The most famous one is probably Quap, which is, everyone has probably played it for a few seconds in their browser. You control this kind of runner with the Q, W, O, and P letters on your keyboard. And you try, like, you have to basically tap them in rhythm to make your character advance. Otherwise, I don't know, your leg goes backward and you fall down.
Right, you control the muscle, the upper and lower muscle groups of each leg with a letter.
Right, and it's just, it demands way more coordination than I have. So, yeah, I've never played it for more than 10 seconds. But it's, in this case, you're trying to control this, this octopus in a suit. It's kind of the same principle. It's very hard to control. You basically use the control sticks. You hold down one of the trigger, the shoulder buttons to raise a leg, and you use the left joystick to kind of move it around, and then you have to release the trigger to put the leg down, and then you do the same thing with the right trigger. So you have to alternate between left, right, and at the same time, if you don't hold any triggers, the left and right analog sticks control the height, kind of like your hand in the X and Y plane, and the right stick controls the depth.
Oh,
so
geez.
Yeah, so there are tasks such as take this key and use it to open this this cabinet, and it's way harder than it looks because you need to use one of the shoulder buttons to kind of to stick to get your tentacle to stick to the object, and then you move it up and then left, and then you push it forward in the screen to, you know, so you have to do all these little motions. And the challenge of the game really is to do all of that, to do the stuff that the game asks you to do, very mundane tasks such as make, you know, do cook something on a barbecue for your kids, or shop, go grocery shopping, do that while trying to pass off as human, which means without missing too much and without slipping on banana peels and without, you know, sticking to everything. Otherwise, people who have you in their line of sight will notice that there's something wrong with this guy, and eventually you're going to be, you know, found out and possibly chopped into sushi or something. I'm not sure exactly what the backstory is, because there, you start off and this Octodad is getting married, and you have to, you know, get your tuxedo and to make your way down the aisle and to find your bride. And there's right after that, the second stage, you have kids, and there's no explanation. Like, they're probably from a previous marriage, I hope, but you know, there's no explanation why you would have human kids. So I don't know. Anything is possible.
Anything
these days, the world's crazy.
So yeah, like the game is really funny just because you'll mess around. Like you won't be able to control this character very well. And that is kind of a source of endless comedy in itself. Just the way I see you like struggling, trying to get out of a ball pit, chasing after your children and going down a zip line, and just, it's just insane the kind of stuff that the game has you do. But also there's lots of comedy in kind of the stuff that your neighbors are telling you, and like, you know, like they're very cordial. It's a very kind of suburban Americana kind of like feel to it. Like everyone is super nice except this one neighbor who has seen through your disguise and tries to kill you with his lawnmower. And there's lots of like nods and references to other indie titles. Like when you're in the grocery store, there's a machine to rent videos that's Commander Video themed. And if you go in the butcher section, you've got cubes of meat with little bandages on it that are clearly, you know, little meat boys. So yeah, it's a very cute, very fun, very funny game, and you can actually play it co-op. So
oh, you split the arms?
Yeah, well, if controlling all these limbs by yourself is too complicated. Try, like, one person controls one leg and the other person controls the other leg and the right arm. And you try. it's a challenge, you know. And yeah, the final game that I played, what did I play?
Rodea.
Oh, yeah. So I got Rodea, the Sky Soldier, which is this pro-pay game.
I would call it a pro-pay long-suffering odyssey.
Yeah, it came out so long ago in Japan, and there were, I don't know, I think there was always talk of someone bringing it over, but it took a long, long time. And who ended up doing this? Like, NIS?
Yeah. I mean, okay. the game got announced what feels like 100 million years ago.
Yeah. And in the time between when it was made and when it got released here, not only like the game got made and released, but it also got ported to the Wii U and 3DS. And so that's what actually we're getting right now. We're getting a Wii U version and a 3DS version, neither of which are very good. And I haven't played them myself, but I've read the reviews, and they apparently there's everything is wrong with these games. Like, they don't control well, they're not very fun, they're technical messes. And the original Wii game is actually the better version because it has, like, better draw distance, it's stable, and also it has, when they remade it, the team that remade it, ported it for Wii U and 3DS, kind of went a different direction with it. They went with a very kind of platformery, adventure-y feel to it. Like, you collect doodads, which you use to buy power-ups, to explore more, etc. And exploration is not the strong aspect of this game. In a Wii version, you don't do any of that. Really, it's more, you do collect stuff, but it's more, I don't know, kind of arcade action. And it's played entirely with a Wii pointer, the Wii remote. So it's pretty weird, you know, like, it's this 3D kind of platformer-looking thing, but you point at different surfaces. Usually the stages will be these floating islands with different structures on them, windmills, what have you. And so you point to something that's not too far away, and you press B, and so Rodea starts flying towards it in kind of an arc. And so that's how you get around. And so you kind of have these unlimited jumps that you can do, even in midair. You just keep pointing to new stuff, and you'll just, Rodea will just correct his flight and go towards that new thing. And if you hold down A, then you kind of do a spin, and that's his attack. And so, you know, you point an enemy, you press A, you kind of smash into it until the enemy explodes. You'll collect these doodads in midair, and if you usually they'll be in a line, and if you get the first one from the right angle and you press A, then you're gonna go around and collect automatically this whole line of power-ups. So it has this kind of, you know, Sonic feel to it, in that, like, all of a sudden you're kind of on rails and the game is a lot faster, and it's hard to explain. But anyway, like, The game itself is actually, the Wii version is actually pretty good. It's fast-paced. As soon as you stop and try to explore, it kind of falls apart. But when you're moving around, when you're flying around, when you're attacking these enemies, one of the latest bosses that I attacked was this giant robot. Kind of like, you know, we talked about Shadow of the Colossus recently, so kind of on that scale. The fight was much more simplistic, but it was still, like, you know, pretty impressive and pretty fun. So yeah, like, when the game pits you against huge bosses or has you take out these planes in midair or these blimps, or when it has you kind of on rails and collecting stuff and course correcting very slightly to grab more of these power-ups or these doodads, that's when it's good. It feels good. You're going fast, and
it works.
Arcade action games. Yeah, it works. But ultimately, you know, like, I got it because I, for some reason, I've decided I was a pro-pay fan. And even I, you know,
it's
would
it's
only
that Let's Catch Magic.
Yep.
Let's catch us another sucker.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of this roommate who decided he was a Judge Reinhold fan and went and bought the DVDs of Zandali and vice versa and what have you.
Oh my God.
How many times can you watch Beverly Hills Cop?
Yeah, I know.
No, but he's got other movies and they're all bad.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High? I mean...
Like when you're strutting...
I mean, his prime was about 3 years between 82 and like 85.
And half those movies had Eddie Murphy in them.
Exactly.
The comparison is really like when you're straddling the line between like earnestness and...
Irony,
yeah, like I'm...
And you can't, you don't remember what sides you're on anymore?
Exactly. So that's kind of where I'm at with Propay, you know? Like, Ivy the Kiwi was really good. Let's Catch, Let's Tap, I really like those. But then there are other stuff, like, why did I buy Fishing Resort? I don't know.
I like Fishing Resort.
Well, yeah, it's pretty good. But, I mean, I've never bought a fishing game before.
I also didn't pay for it. Like, that's an important distinction. I got it as a review copy. Would I have ever bought Fishing Resort? No!
So, but yeah, even as a self-declared Propay fan, I would give this a 7 out of 10, maybe. Don't rush out to get this game.
Thanks for your hot takes, Guillaume. Did you buy it with the Wii U version?
Yeah, you have no choice. That's the thing. Only the initial run has the Wii game included.
The only version of the game that is apparently playable.
Exactly. So, if you wanted this, you probably own it already. And I don't know who I'm talking to right now.
Us. But, I mean, that's John, that's Greg, and I'm James.
Yeah, what I've explained made you think like, oh wait, a new Yuji Naka game? Like, I have to play this. Go grab one right now, because the future prints, if they ever reprint this game,
are
not going to have the good version. Yeah.
Yeah, our friend Don Koopman has played and reviewed the Wii U version, and it's train wreck is the word I would use to describe it.
Yeah, I had pre-ordered the 3DS and Wii U versions, and then
wrong with you?
Whatever. I don't have to explain myself to you.
Speaking
like,
of,
what?
Of
I was
judge,
willing to let you have. I was
some people
to...
like Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Yeah.
Oh, Greg.
Yes.
Let's move on.
Save us.
Greg, why don't you tell us about other games from Japan?
Well, yeah, I think it's pretty apt timing. I've had this game for quite a while, but I just hadn't had a window to get discussed on New Businesses on that. In terms of, this is the Yang to Yokai Watch's Yin. From the point of view, this was so this is Geist Crusher from Capcom, a Japan-only 3DS game.
A company you may have heard of.
Yes, and this was their attempt to create a sort of transmedia, polymorphic content, mega franchise in Japan, in the vein of what Level 5 has done before and stuff, and didn't go so well. So this particular game, Geist Crusher for 3DS, came out 2 years ago. There was kind of a sequel / upgraded version kind of deal that came out a year later, called Geist Crusher God.
Geist Crusher God?
Yeah, that's what it's called. And, you might wonder why I play this, but if this game that bombed incredibly hard. I mean, you just can't fathom how badly this game bombed. It's so bad. So it sold very, very little.
Are we talking like Spyborg style bomb here?
Relative to Japan's market for 3DS, yeah. I mean, considered Capcom's so really quite a lot of resources into this. You had an anime, you had manga, you had like NFC stuff, at physical toys that would interact with the game as well. I mean, they went full court press for this thing. Mm-hmm.
And it was supposed to be their next big property.
No, exactly. I mean, some people were kind of thinking, is this like Monster Hunter for kids, kind of thing? Mm-hmm. And it just sunk without a trace. Although, like I said, I guess just to try and give it one more go, they did release a second game.
And they upped the stakes by calling it God.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, God, perhaps.
I said, oh, God, where'd all the end go?
But yeah, it was they brought on treasure to make it. So I've always had this little curiosity about, you know, is basically the last thing that treasure have done. Go back to, you know, over a year ago now. This is what they've been up to. There was not that much coverage of it online. I think Nintendo World Report has probably comfortably covered the game the most out of any outlet you're going to find in terms of, I mean, Danny did a hands-on with it out there in Japan, and he and Don both talked about it on the Famicast. You know, I mean, that's way more than pretty much anybody else could claim to have done.
Well, because Capcom never did any PR for it outside of Japan.
No, I don't think they were ever sort of envisioning it coming to the West. You know, it would have had to be some sort of, you know, success similar to the scale of Yo-Kai Watch or something for that to even really enter into the thinking. And of course, it fell so far short that discussion certainly never got going. It wasn't anything I was ever desperate to play based on the fact that, you know, the limited amount that I did read about it suggested that it had some, you know, cool fundamental elements and whatnot. But, you know, the big knock on it was like that it's sort of very repetitive. What happened was after I sort of dipped into the 3DS import scene to get Rhythm Heaven, which I really wanted, it's sort of, okay, let's take stock again and see, you know, what's out there that's just Japan only. And like, Capcom's EX Trooper game for 3DS, EX Troopers,
yep,
which was also a PS3 and stuff, is like one of the bigger ones, which this game apparently has some similarities to. But that's really quite expensive. This, on the other hand, in its bombastic-ness, is dirt cheap. Really dirt cheap. So dirt cheap, in fact, that if I had I ordered it by itself instead of like with some other games I was importing, or just other accessories and stuff, it would have been more expensive to ship it economy airmail than it would have been to buy the game itself. It was that cheap.
Man.
So I thought, screw it. All right, let's have a look at this thing. It's treasure. I own virtually every treasure boxed game on a Nintendo system. I may as well add this to the collection for just a few quid. And I've been playing it little bits and pieces for several weeks now because it is repetitive. And I think, therefore, it is the best way to play it, is just, you know, in these little bursts every now and again, and kind of, you know, you come back to it maybe after a week or two and it's, oh yeah, this is quite fun. And then, oh yeah, this is quite repetitive. But, you know,
but, all right, I mean,
to sort of talk about how the game plays, it's kind of a character action type of game in a way. You know, it's third person. You control a character that has kind of three kind of modes based on these geist characters. So you have all these sort of bosses that you'll fight at the end of a level that are the geists, I guess. There's a lot about this I don't really know because I have zero Japanese language skills and there is not a lot of stuff out there on the internet about this.
You're missing out the hot plot.
Yeah, so a lot of the plot, the stats, what they actually mean, apart from the really obvious color-coded kind of stuff. And, you know, yeah, there's a lot I'm missing. But, you know, I'm getting by anyway. But you have these geists that are the bosses of the game. And if you can kind of beat them totally, I'll get to that later, you essentially like can absorb their powers, and then you kind of have three different forms based on that. You have one where you're kind of wearing them as armor, so this is kind of where some of the superficial Monster Hunter similarity kind of comes in. Then another form where the armor then converts into a giant weapon, which is also, I guess, Monster Hunter-y.
Yeah, a little
huge
bit.
Swords, yeah. A bow and arrow, you know, all different sorts. And then finally, if you build up a meter, you can actually, for a little portion of time, it's called a super attack, just assume the form of the boss. You know, you go full Megazord, whatever, you're gigantic and just kick ass. So, like I said, those boss battles are really, you know, the big, you know, the focus of the game, but every level, you know, you do have little fights against lesser enemies beforehand, you know, which is where it's kind of more like your typical kind of character action kind of game. And those bits are just very they seem kind of very obligatory, you know, like there's no real design in the levels. The one thing is that you will have like certain properties about enemies, you know, in terms of like, well, if you've got this element, you know, then you'll be able to deal more damage or something like that. Again, I don't fully understand all these systems, so you know, it would help if I did probably, but yeah, they're just very simple beat 'em up type encounters that you go through. Sometimes you'll have enemies that have particular kind of shielding, which means you'll have to beat them up in the armor form, or you'll have to beat them up in the weapon form, which has certain trade-offs in terms of in the armored form you can't dodge, but you have this kind of force field block, and in the weapon form, as you might imagine, you're more vulnerable to damage, and you've got this sort of big weapon weighing you down, but you can dodge. And I guess the one smart thing that they did with it is that you have like the dodging is kind of limited in that you have a meter that lets you do it. Now, if you have a really well-timed dodge, the kind of thing that would trigger witch time in Bayonetta or whatever, it actually doesn't cost you anything on the meter. So, you know, that way you could chain together a whole bunch of dodges. But if you're just kind of spamming it, you're going to run out fast. And then you're not going to be able to dodge or block, and you might be in trouble. So I kind of like the way that works, and it just prevents it from being just like indiscriminate dodgy all the time. Because, I mean, it's kind of big because like some of the attacks with the weapons, again, somewhat sort of in a Monster Hunter style, they might have like a big animation cycle that'll leave you to damage, you're vulnerable to damage if there's other enemies around you or whatever. But dodging takes you out of that. So again, you know, the temptation to spam it would be there. And that meter kind of helps limit it. But it just isn't really that much interesting stuff that they do with this. You know, what seems to be a pretty fundamentally sound kind of set of systems and switching of forms and various different weapons that play quite differently. You know, and they're pretty fun to use. You know, I mean, and some are just bizarre to look at and also play kind of similar. I mean, there's one that I got for being this sort of giant pink elephant boss. And it's this enormous like cannon that just spews poison gas out of this elephant mouth. Like, I mean, some are far more mundane, like just giant swords and stuff. But I do like the way some of them really do, you know, reflect the thing that you killed. And then the boss fights themselves are definitely what's you know, the whole point really. But they look pretty cool, and you know, they might have some aspects to their design, but this is not, you know, what you might really think of as like quintessential treasure boss fights or anything. It's not that sophisticated. You're not dealing with that level of kind of attack patterns and all that. It's just not that clever. It's more a case of, okay, first of all, have you brought the right weapon to the party in terms of, you know, the elemental trade-offs, matchups and all that. And then the second part of it really is, you know, they're these huge things. They've got huge attack range. So it's a case of, you know, you've got to sort of get in there, land some blows, get out again without completely wasting your dodge meter, leaving you kind of just completely hopeless right next to them. So, you know, it's not the strategy doesn't really change that much. I mean, there's a couple of little wrinkles, like the bosses have like their health, but then they also have like a physical stamina. And the thing with that is once you exhaust their physical stamina, it just leaves them in a stunned state for a while, at which point you could totally wail on them with the most powerful attacks. So you don't have to worry about the fact you're caught in an animation cycle anymore because it can't do anything to you. You know, in retaliation. And the thing about that is that only like, it seems, again, my understanding of these systems is imperfect, to say the least, but it seems like only sort of physical attacks really drain that quickly. You know, some weapons might have like range attacks, which you could do good damage to its health from a distance where you feel safe, but it won't give you that ability to stun it by exhausting its stamina. So it might end up being kind of a longer haul if you go that way. So you've got a few little, you know, elements like that, but nothing too terribly interesting. And then finally, when you kill it, its core kind of comes out and you've got about 30 odd seconds to destroy the core. And if you do, that's how you get it as, you know, a playable
weapon and eventually, you know, use it as a boss. So, you know, that kind of introduces this element of like, do I want to save my super attack for actually after I've defeated it? Because, you know, that might be what it would need for you to, you know, be able to destroy the core in time. So, you know, there's these little kind of trade-offs and decisions to make. It's depending on how badly you care about actually assuming the form of that boss in subsequent stages. I guess that's really like one of the main appeals of it. It's trying to scratch that itch of Pokemon a bit, you know, like collecting this.
Yeah, it's monster collecting, but you just collect their skin.
Yeah, you know, although they're metallic things, so I guess it's not quite that gruesome. But yeah, I mean, that's it's kind of some weird amalgam of Pokemon Monster Hunter, like trying to go for the, you know, it's so brazenly trying to target these itches that the Japanese market just can't help but scratch compulsively.
Apparently, they can.
But somehow they just missed the mark really badly. It's quite funny. Like I said, I mean, it's not a great game, but you know, the fundamentals are pretty sound. I mean, the repetitiveness is something that's, you know, a factor in a number of games that are very successful with Japan or with children in general. So, I mean, you know, it's no tragedy that this game has gone ignored or whatever, but it still remains a bit puzzling because, you know, I've had some fun with it for a few quid and, like I said, just did short bursts here or there, which is not a bad thing for a portable game. So, yeah, you know, it's been worth picking up, but,
do you think there's other games on the market that do what it does better?
I mean, I guess, you know, probably, I assume, you know, Monster Hunter, to the extent that it is similar, you know, probably does things better.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think it just, the quests in that and all that kind of stuff, the gear and all just seem to create a kind of feedback loop, a kind of motivation, satisfaction kind of loop that really works for people. And evidently this did not. But, you know, it seems like a perfectly passable game. I just, from my point of view, not thinking about the consequences for the wider market, the basic combat and the systems and the stats and all that all seem, even with my admittedly imperfect understanding of them, very sound. They really do need to be applied to a more interesting game design.
I wonder now, if Monster Hunter X, which seems much more focused on action combat,
yeah.
Cross. Excuse me, I forgot. That like that seems much less of the Monster Hunter style combat and more actiony. I wonder if this is their pivot to try to salvage some of that. Like,
yeah,
right,
I mean, they
you
are
assholes
obviously
won't play this. How about we put Monster Hunter on it there?
Yeah, now they are actually pushing the Monster Hunter brand out a bit. You've got the Monster Hunter RPG, and then you've got Monster Hunter Cross as well. Yeah, so maybe, you know, they're going to try, you know, a similar thing in a different way, you know, but broadening the appeal of something that already has that name cachet. Mm-hmm. And that may well be more successful for them. But it just, I don't know how much of this is just the limitations of what, you know, the brief that Capcom gave Treasure or whatever, you know, this is very much Treasure in their kind of, you know, like, it's kind of like a licensed game, even though it isn't, you know, like, because of the nature of the project. But, you know, you need, I know, like, Bayonetta, something like that, like, okay, the combat is the meat of the game. That's what people come for. That's what's principally so good about it. But there is other things going on there.
It's got style.
It's obvious, yeah, the style and all that. But, you know, certain set pieces or, you know, little bits of puzzle, you know, things like that. Just this meat on the bones in that game, you know, that kind of helps stitch it together. And also, I mean, the encounters are a lot more varied and the enemy design is a lot better and all that kind of to take advantage of the combat. So, I mean, it's you know, something like a Bayonetta, you know, that kind of game is better in combat and out of it. But I just think, you know, then if you really wanted to make it a game that someone would be actually willing to pour a lot of time into, there just had to be more variety. And evidently that was not something that Capcom really cared about, because I don't think God really fixed that at all. It's very much just more of what was in the first version.
Are you saying even God couldn't save Geist Crusher?
I think that's been empirically verified.
Can God make a game so generic even he can't save it?
Yeah. So it's I hope Treasure survived. I hope they at least, you know, Treasure got paid. There was some good that came out of this complete disaster. But it commercially, the game is not a disaster, you know. But
I'm sure they got paid either way.
Hopefully they didn't get paid and then like are still about to fold or something. Yeah. Do them some good.
Treasure will be like, okay, we have to make another shoot 'em up. Make it so.
Let's hope so.
We have to cleanse this palette.
In some ways, it's kind of weird that Treasure haven't gotten in on the Kickstarter thing that's happening, you know, like with these Japanese developers. Cause, you know, I mean, they broke off from Konami long ago to, you know, explore, you know, things that they wanted to do.
Smartest move ever made, by the way.
In retrospect. But, you know, I hope they're not just going to be doing games like this to survive and not be able to do any of their own stuff anymore.
You'll just see. Yeah, next up, an iOS game with Konami. No!
No!
Next up!
So on the nightmare thought of Treasure making a pachinko game.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a break. And after the break, during the break, you're going to get to hear John and I do something awful. And then after the break, you're going to get to hear listener mail.
Awfully awesome.
No. It's now playing. A sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. Hey, John's back. I don't have to read these on my own anymore. Mm. Yeah, I know.
Goodness.
We have a review. Mario, Mario Tennis Ultra Smash on Wii U by Don Koopman / Matt West. Don's a vet here, but he seems to have found a Kusage protege, none other than Matt West. Watch as they dance around using the word Kusage, instead using adjectives like functional, minimalist, and uninspired to describe this clay court dumpster fire. Welcome to Holiday 2015.
Yeah, so I just looked at this, like, kind of warmed my heart. You have to pass the torch. It's kind of a Kusage passing of the torch, I think. You know?
Kuso torch.
Yep. Matt's picking it up and running with it. I like to see it. It's good to see the next generation.
It's not really a torch, like it is like a flaming bag of poop.
Yeah. Very correct.
Speaking of which, we have another review.
I gave you a couple. I teed you up for these ones this week.
You just gave me the winners. Yep. And I'm just gonna chew on the scenery while I read them.
Yep. Do it.
Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival, Wii U by Moron Head. Ever wanted to watch Neil take a bullet for the greater good? Yes. But wait, what? Sorry. Now's your chance. He describes this as a, quote, party game that falls short of even the earlier 2015 disappointment, Mario Party 10. So apparently, we now need a most disappointing board game award every year. Great. I mean, the biggest problem there is we've got too many awards in place.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you seldom see a game described as described in a comparison to a game that was even more disappointing.
Well, less disappointing now, apparently.
Well, yeah. Well, it's saying a game is less disappointing than a game that was really disappointing.
Well, hold on. Well, so if we were to give an award to one of these games to be most disappointing in Mario Party style, losing is winning. Does that mean the winner actually is the one that didn't get the award?
Oh, man. I'm just moving on from that. All right. All right. We got a preview of Mario & Luigi Paper Jam Brothers for 3DS by none other than Don Koopman. Don strikes again, but this time it's with a preview of something a little better. Mario RPG. Hey, it's a Mario RPG, but, you know, find out if there's anything different going on this time around. More importantly, find out how amiibos are integrated. Or amiibo? Am I saying that right? I don't know. I'm not an amiibo expert.
So,
I don't know what's plural and what's not plural.
So it's,
singular,
it's,
is that the word I'm looking for? Oh, I don't know.
Maybe it's like Greeks, they'd be amiiboy. Amiibos.
Alright, we know what you're here for, so check out the Mario and Luigi Paper Jam Brothers preview.
Amiibos.
And we have a review of Gunslugs 2 for 3DS by none other than Don Koopman. All Don, all the time. You can never have enough. You can never have enough Coop in a now playing. So we round out the week with his review of Gunslugs 2. It's not too bad, actually, so you Coopsogay fans will not be disappointed. Or you will be disappointed. Take your pick. For the record, he does describe it as being, quote-unquote, pretty mindless for the most part. So he does draw some blood. You know, Don has to get a parting shot in there. Take that Gunslugs 2. But there's always next week.
You can get this and more guttural sounds right now on NintendoWorldReport.com. And we're back. It's time for listener mail. You can send your emails to rfn@NintendoWorldReport.com. I'll say it again at the end of the show. John is going to be leaving us after this email.
I'm actually going to be killed.
I wanted to make it like Lester just leaving.
I wanted to be cool about it. Like, I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to bring the show down a notch.
I didn't want to make it a big deal. I understand. I didn't want to make it a big deal. But you'll hear more of John in the upcoming telethon, which I'll be plugging at the end of the show.
I will be in spirit form.
John will be a yokai ruining the show like he always does.
There'll be a ceremony before to bring me back from the other side, etc.
That's actually a stretch goal, though, so you should probably donate.
Stretch goal to bring you back from the other side, folks.
Richard writes, I understand this question may have been asked, but I'm still curious. Which three franchises do you want to see Nintendo shoehorn? I don't like the judgmental nature of that.
It's like kind of a backhanded insult.
I'm gonna fix that, Richard.
Which franchise should they shit on?
Maybe actually earnestly means which ones do you want them to shoehorn? Like where they really shouldn't. Like not the good games that they make for mobile, but like the really questionable ones.
That's a good point.
Which three franchises do you want them to defecate onto mobile devices everywhere? And what kind of games do you think these steaming piles would be?
Well, if we're talking shoehorn, I think we all know what is going to get shoehorned more so is Pokemon. Because, well, I mean, we're already getting Pokemon Picross on the 3DS. Like, I think it's pretty much a surefire bet that that'll get shoehorned.
Well, but that may not be part of Nintendo's thing, though, because Pokemon Company has
I know, but you got to assume that they'll be doing... I know they're doing... Obviously, they've got that the Go thing, isn't it? You know, which is... That isn't so much of just a pure shoehorn. Yeah, that looks like a pretty big deal that they're doing. But, you know, they've shown a willingness to do that stuff with Pokemon, so...
Right.
That would be an example. So it's like, well, you know, would they do that with Mario or Zelda or Metroid or, you know, anything else on mobile?
I don't know. I mean, controls always will be a factor, right?
Well, no, so John, we're shoehorning. Give us your shoehorned in title.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I think that will depend which games kind of... I mean, I think shoehorning implies that you're taking something that shouldn't be mobile and making it...
That's the other aspect. That's the more game design. Like, you could look at it from the IP standpoint of like, okay, you're putting this IP onto a style of game that it has nothing to do with, which is, you know, Pokemon Picross kind of thing. Or are you gonna try and shoehorn on like, you know, a typical action platformer onto, you know, touch controls that don't necessarily hold up to muster.
I guess
you could look at it either way.
I mean, what kind of games do I think there'll be? I think there'll be rhythm games. I think there'll be stuff that uses locational awareness.
Games.
For me, that would seem logical. But for me, mm-hmm. if this can't be something that brings back WarioWare, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's been ages since we've had a proper WarioWare game. It's definitely the kind of thing that could work on mobile. If this doesn't bring back WarioWare, I don't know what would.
Yeah.
But the Wii U was also well suited for a WarioWare game.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Just,
I mean, it's sort of in there as a sub game in Game and Wario with the part where your mother's coming by.
Yeah, the.
Nine volts, mother, is coming out of the TV like it's Ringu. Genuinely, that is brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant, but it is not really a substitute for WarioWare, a proper WarioWare game, which we've not had in an awfully long time. I mean, obviously there was DIY, but that was, you know, a little
different. There was, what was it, Wario photo.
Yeah, there's a DSiWare photo where, you know, I mean, just an honest to goodness WarioWare in the vein of the Wii game, the DS game, the two GBA games. You know, it's something I miss a great deal on consoles. Now, I'm not necessarily expecting it would be on that scale on mobile, but, you know, it would be nice for me as someone who's probably not going to get a lot out of this mobile initiative. One thing I would like to get out of is, like, you know, maybe it could revitalize certain aspects of Nintendo's portfolio.
Right. And, like, you could expect maybe an Advance War revival. Like, they don't seem to be interested in putting one on 3DS, so why not
an iPad, I mean. The problem I've got with Advance Wars is that I think this initiative is going, and, you know, to some extent what we've seen so far suggests this as well, is going to be very Japan-driven. And, you know, they didn't even bother bringing out Days of Ruin in Japan, apart from, like, as a Club Nintendo thing or something. You know, it's pretty much got Excite-botted. Even though it was, you know, developed in Japan, then localized into English and various other languages for release in the Western markets. So
right, but weren't they aiming for the Western market?
Oh, kind I imagine like they were, but it just... And... But, like, why make a game like that if you don't think the Japanese are very excited about that game anymore? You know, that series. It just suggests that maybe they felt like, you know, that Japan had had its fill of that series.
Yeah,
so,
of course.
I would be thrilled if we could get something in that vein. You know, that would be beyond my expectations. But what? I don't think it's all that likely, given the number. You know, we're talking about 5 by the end of the fiscal, the next fiscal year, you know.
Yeah.
Ended in 2017. In March 2017 or whatever, so...
Well, and I wonder about the scope, scale, and target audience for a mobile game. Because mobile games still tend to have big sprawling campaigns. And,
yeah.
And I wonder if the people on Nintendo... I mean, look at their Mii, whatever it's called. Mii... I can't remember.
Miitomo?
Yeah. Like, it doesn't seem like they're targeting the consumer who would be into Advance Wars.
Right.
To me, the play here is something a bit more approachable, something where the charm is a big factor. So I'm actually going to lean on Guillaume here and say, Guillaume, what do you think is Nintendo's most charming franchise?
So you could say that word, but he can't. That's not
I know.
Fair.
Well, there's a franchise. I want to see if he comes to the same number or the same name.
I guess Pikmin or Nintendo Chibi Robo or. Kirby?
Kirby.
Really? I was thinking Animal Crossing.
Yeah, Crossing, I think, is the prime candidate. I mean, whether you, yep. regardless of, just, the question is about what do we want to see, presumably leaving the shoehorn semantics out of it.
So, like, my swatting down of Advance Wars is not appreciated. It's the game that I want to bring back. Like, come on.
No, I sincerely agree.
I would love a new Advance Wars game.
I want a lot of things. You know, I want to beat the Patriots on Monday night. It's not going to fucking happen.
I mean, I think you will see Mario Kart. I think they'll make a Mario Kart version, probably with tracks you can download.
How would you play it, though?
You would play it just like you would on the Super NES, from straight behind.
Oh, with virtual buttons?
Yeah. Well, you just slide back and forth with it.
Konami did do that Crazy Races version on iOS, like, back at the end of the last decade.
Yeah,
so the playbook's already been done.
You could do it. It won't translate one-to-one, but... I mean,
you probably will use the accelerators, actually, the accelerometers, motion controls.
Yeah, I would have thought so, or gyro, whatever, you know, I guess is available in the particular tech. But
it just doesn't sound fun.
I think the feasible and the desirable, the two different things, and also different things to different people. But with racing, platformers, all that kind of stuff, I just don't, I mean, at least with Animal Crossing, you feel like they could do something with it on mobile that, you know, fits in with the kind of game that it is. Obviously, you know, I feel like it would be kind of redundant.
Obviously, but they did Happy Home Designer and friggin' Amiibo Festival.
Yeah, I mean, they've kind of already crossed that Rubicon.
The bar is so low
before
now.
Before mobile, yeah. So, but I actually think they could do something on mobile that wouldn't feel like so much of a you know, like, oh, they've just put Animal Crossing on this thing. They could actually do something that feels like it has some of that same appeal, that it's set in that same, you know, endearing environment that Animal Crossing, you know, I think that that could be something that, you know, it's not so much like I'm hugely invested in that property and I want to see it go to mobile, but it's one thing I would want to see mode to go to mobile from the point of view I think it could be done well. It wouldn't be like this platformer that doesn't control well. And, yeah, you know,
right.
It's,
I mean,
sucks.
I mean, I think
they could easily bring over Pokemon trading card game. I mean, yeah. seeing how well Hearthstone.
Haven't
they
already done that?
Hearthstone
already,
is just making a killing.
Doesn't that already exist? The digital the
yeah, it does. I think Pokemon. So what I think would happen is Nintendo would need to make a deal with the Pokemon company to do it through the DNA thing, and then do it.
Another
do it. Splashy and stuff, not just like digital cards. But see, when I think of Animal Crossing, so Happy Home, House Arrest, Use the Force Edition, whatever name that we're using, our NWR people have made up for it this day, is sort of focused so squarely on making the house. Nintendo has a franchise that focuses squarely on the style savvy stuff.
Oh yeah.
What if they just did that for Animal Crossing? Like, that was the Animal Crossing thing. They just did style stabby Animal Crossing on your phone. Done. Ship it. Because I think when they talk about their plan for mobile, it's not to replicate their console and handheld experiences in mobile. So I don't think they'd want to make a full Animal Crossing game there.
No, I don't see that.
Because it's a driver to people buying their hardware, because those games sell a shit ton of copies in Japan.
It's so popular, so cute. That's what, I mean, you've got to think it's perfect for this, you know, assuming it is a Japan-centric initiative. At least initially, then it's the perfect property. It's just a case of how do you kind of pick which elements of the regular game that you kind of go with and spin off and try and make something that does feel, you know, like its own on mobile, and that would really benefit from like this whole you know, sort of communicating with people on your friends list from the Nintendo account thing, and the Street Pass type of functionality, you know, stuff that really would benefit from those features. The fact that, okay, Animal Crossing, you know, has the New Leaf, it has Street Pass functionality and all that, but it's still kind of limited by the fact that, especially in, you know, if you're not in a Japanese city or certain cities, you know, the Street Pass functionality is not that widespread. If you have something truly widespread, sort of communal interaction through the Nintendo account, it could open up certain areas of Animal Crossing to be explored in a way they haven't been yet.
So I have something I would like to see that I also think they could do. And I think you could make a Zelda game styled, Not a full Zelda game, but maybe it focuses squarely on dungeons, kind of like Triforce Heroes does, but in a different way. But you could style the controls based around Phantom Hourglass.
Yeah, they've already kind of solved that challenge to some extent.
I don't think they'd want to make a full game, but
no,
let's say if they pushed, you know, a dungeon a month, like you could buy a couple dungeons and play them. Like some mechanism through which they could keep you coming back to that game and give you relatively easy to produce on their side challenges. Like it would be, oh, ew. What if they made it so you could make your own? Because unlike Mario Maker, where what you'd make requires like button inputs, if you just made 2D Zelda games and then you made it control like Phantom Hourglass, you could actually make and play them on the same devices.
I don't know. It sounds like way more than people are willing to invest in them.
Yeah. It does, but. Yeah. Ooh, it goes to that question of, like, would they ever make a 2D Zelda Maker?
I know people have broached the subject, and Nintendo haven't seemed too enthused about it, but, I mean, you can never say exactly where they wouldn't, even if they had been thinking about it internally, they wouldn't necessarily shout that from the rooftops. But,
right.
I do think it's a hell of a lot more of a heavy lift to get that working as well, relative to the franchises as they already exist, as how Super Mario Maker's done it.
I mean, do you think we're going to see a hidden object Metroid Other M game where it's completely those scenes where you have to look for green blood on greenery?
The search for the glitter Metroid. Yeah, it's, yep. it, no, I mean,
it's within all of us.
It, If that is what Sakamoto ends up doing instead of WarioWare, I am not going to be happy.
What if it's just a Metroid dance game?
I struggle to see, you know, stuff like Metroid. A Zelda, yeah, you know, something Zelda, I could see, you know, yeah, how it could be done kind of.
Maybe some Hyrule Warriors spin-off, something like that. Like, you could just, you know, killing waves of enemies, something like that. Something that lends itself to just kind of tapping or kind of that repetitive sort
but,
of
but Metroid, I just I don't see it. I don't see the value. I mean, I really struggle to see the value in putting anything that approaches a Mario platformer on it. I really do. I know there's probably tons of pressure for the investors, but there's loads of different ways you could put Mario into it. I mean, we've got Mario Puzzle and Dragons, for God's sake. I mean, you know, they can put the IP on there. They will put the IP on there. I've no doubt of that. But in terms of actually the kind of game, if we consider sort of Mario platformers to be kind of a separate franchise from just Mario at large, I don't want to see that on there. I'll say that. No. I just don't see what.
I mean, does the world need another endless runner? Because that's really
Well, maybe Nintendo. Maybe I'm underestimating Nintendo's ability to do something really interesting with it, but I just don't see it.
I could see them doing like Mario RPGs. I could see them doing that, like kind of like a very simple menu system kind of thing. I could see that. Or maybe putting them out in episodes rather than actually putting out as a full blown game. You know, people could play through it in, you know, maybe like in maybe a couple hours or something like that.
Maybe. But so like what would you get excited about? Like what franchise, just without the confines of mobile, what franchise would make you excited?
I mean, Without the confines,
don't say Halo or wanting to call up.
No. I mean, do I even have to answer that question at this point? I mean, Metroid, F-Zero. I mean, games they don't make anymore. Really, just fill in the blanks.
All the obvious stuff. I mean,
or you know, I'm not even gonna mention the words Federation Force. But I mean, you know,
get out.
Whatever.
I'm not gonna mention the words. Here they are.
Yeah, I had something in my throat.
Yeah, your ass.
It tasted pretty bitter.
Jesus, little wee. No, I mean, for me, I guess I'm struggling to come up with three. I've got WarioWare, Animal Crossing, I think is a good fit, but I can't really, I'll just be candid about it, you know, I mean, in terms of, I'm not that excited about the whole idea, so I'm not, you know, it doesn't naturally spring to mind what I want to see on it. Like I say, I don't imagine I'm going to get a lot out of it. I've not got anything against it. I think it's, you know, something that they, you know, probably need to be doing. And, you know, I think some good can come of it, but it's just not something, you know, that I personally see as something that is going to produce a lot of hours of entertainment for me personally.
Yeah, unless it's something like, you know, a really good puzzle game or something like that, which is kind of like an established genre. I don't know. I'm skeptical of it. I'm skeptical.
Like,
I'm willing
Yoshi
to be
cookie.
Convinced.
A Yoshi cookie game. Like, do that. Please. Do
Paddled
that.
Paddled upon.
Yep.
It's always a solid choice. But although maybe with something more interesting than the Puzzle League brand. Yeah, the post. Because there was Pokemon Puzzle League.
Right.
But then latterly it was just Puzzle League. Yeah. And perfectly good games, but just, you know, didn't have really any personality at all.
What League of Puzzles? Don't talk about it. We don't have the license anymore.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's getting kind of vetted out at this point to what works on the platform and what doesn't. Mobile,
well,
you know what I mean?
Well, it is and it isn't. Like, all we know is that Nintendo keeps saying they're not beholden to what's been done on that platform so far.
True.
And, I mean, we ultimately right now, because all we've seen is Miitomo, we have to kind of take them at their word on that.
Yeah.
So, I think when we see the first one or two actual games, we'll have a better idea of what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, we're sort of beholden by like, well, I mean, Final Fantasy Record Keeper made a lot of money. Well, yeah, but would Nintendo make that? Maybe. Would they partner with their own, you know, partially owned company? Make all right. This is Fire Emblem Record Keeper. Do it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the other part of it is just that, you know, we know that explicitly, you know, part of the rationale of this is essentially as, you know, a sort of brand awareness exercise. You know, that they want to get these brands, these franchises, visible to people.
yeah,
in that space. Presumably, hell, you know, the some fraction of them could then be kind of upsold onto NX or whatever else.
Yeah. Now, I mean, I something like Pokemon Snap, I think, would work.
Yeah.
Like, that would work really well. Like, because you, I mean, you could have it so that you could take pictures with your phone and, like, insert Pokemon into, like, the real pictures.
Oh, so, I mean, Pokemon is just endlessly.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's kind of obvious. That's something.
I think that's part of Pokemon Go, though.
A little bit, maybe. I mean, but, yeah. I suppose the point I was going to make, though, is that if, with that objective in mind, the question becomes, how much does the actual, you know, if you're thinking about selling people up to kind of the real deal or whatever on their dedicated hardware, how much does the mobile part of it have to actually reflect the game design of those games? And how much of it? So you know, the
you
Pokemon...
The console, you know, games?
Yeah, you know,
it doesn't mean to at all.
I think it needs to evoke the emotions of that franchise.
Yeah,
though.
See, I think that's probably where the kind of balance that Nintendo will try to strike. You know, like I said, I think with something like Animal Crossing, that can be done, I think, quite easily, relatively. Mm-hmm. With others, I think it's trickier, and I guess maybe some will be more shoehorny than others in that respect. That's really, I guess, where the shoehorn could come in, where it's like, well, you know what, it's pretty difficult to make a sort of apt mobile game that evokes the sense of this particular franchise, but we still want it out there in the mobile space, so here it is, plastered on something that has absolutely zero to do with it.
Yeah, and I mean, you've seen that with Fallout 4, because, I mean, they have an app for that, which is like, I've never played it, it's Bomb Shelter, it has something to do with, I don't know, creating a bomb shelter or something like that, but it's exactly that, it evokes the spirit of the game, and I think probably feeds into Fallout 4 somehow. But yeah, that's kind of the way things are going, like, you know,
right. I mean,
it's obvious they know what they can and can't do on phones, so they kind of tailor the experience to that.
Well, most know what they can and can't do.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
We gave a long answer to fail to give three choices, but this is something we're going to come back to, I think, after we see the first proper game Nintendo announces, which sometime next year. You know, it's something that I think we as a show are going to cover a lot of times going forward, and we'll have a better idea of what they can do once they show us what they think they can do. I mean, we all have franchises we want to see again, but I think ultimately if you really asked us, we'd want to see it given the full resplendent treatment, not given kind of a mobile side job, which is also a sex act you can get paid to do.
I mean,
how much can you get paid?
It depends on how you look and how heavy the police presence is.
Proficiency. It's a rhythm game.
It's a rhythm game. Yeah, it's a mobile side job. The rhythm game.
All right, I think on that note, I'm going to make my exit.
That note, we're going to evict John Lindemann from this episode.
All right, guys.
All right, John.
I'll see you all next week.
Bye, John. All right, so I guess that meets Greg. You've got the next email.
Ben writes, "Hey guys, with the recent Nintendo Direct and all of the other announcements recently, there's a lot of RPGs, especially of the Japanese style, coming to 3DS over the next 12 to 14 months. Why do you think there was hardly any for the 3DS for the longest time? The DS was a great platform for RPGs, and hopefully now 3DS will go down as well as the DS did in the end. Also, is there any hope for Wii U to get a late surge in RPGs as the Wii did? So why can't it happen for the Wii U? Thanks, guys." It does also mention...
Postscriptum,
yeah, so, but yeah, the sort of PS here on over the next 12 to 14 months... I put it, point. He says, "Apart from Tales of the Abyss, I can't think of any large-scale releases until Bravely Default came along. And now look at it, you've got two Dragon Quest games, 3/1 Pokemon, is the retro releases, 3 or 1 Fire Emblem games, Yo-Kai Watch, Etrian Odyssey, Final Fantasy Explorers, Bravely Second, Project Cross Zone 2, Legend of Legacy, all the games Europe hasn't had yet, et cetera, et cetera."
So I take a little bit of issue with this one. Not to just go to war with our listeners right off the bat. But I think the JRPGs we were getting. I think the RPGs we were getting, almost, but because it's 3DS, almost everything on this platform is Japan originating. So
it's dominated by Japan, because obviously first of all, it's dominated by Nintendo.
Right.
But then while third party support it's had, you know, pretty much ever since launch, I mean the Western third parties dropped out like straight away.
I mean Atlus back in, I guess by 13, they had already published Devil Survivor Overclocked. They had published Etrian Odyssey 4, Tales of the Abyss? No.
No.
No. They did Code of Princess. I mean, they were in there. Nintendo had, there was Soul Hackers as well. Nintendo did, as much as people don't like it, Paper Mario Sticker Star. They did Fire Emblem Awakening. They did,
Mario and Luigi Dream Team.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Square Enix had a Kingdom Hearts 3D Dream Drop Distance. God damn it, I hate that name.
It's not the worst Kingdom Hearts name by a long shot.
No, it's not, but it's still bad. So there were a lot. The Pokemon X and Y, Project Cross Zone. Like, there were a lot. It's just they weren't necessarily the big names you might think of, necessarily. Like, there certainly are a lot of them right
now.
It's
worth mentioning that Dragon Quest VII.
Right,
it
came out a while
quite
ago.
Quite a number of years old. You know? I mean, that did come out in Japan a long time ago. We just, for whatever reason, did not get localized for us until the next year, I guess it's going to be. But we talked about this again, like with the whole like cycle thing. Like, this kind of natural for RPGs to be backloaded to some extent, you know, because they generally tend to take longer to develop.
Right.
Not only they take longer to develop, but they take longer to localize because there's so much text usually.
That's the compounding element, is that, you know, then you'll get that add into the lag. And then, of course, you know, even beyond just the simple act of localizing the game, there's kind of these business decisions that come into play.
Right, the marketing.
Like, they could have brought out Dragon Quest VII a long time ago. Perhaps, you know, some of it is the RPG market maturing on 3DS outside of Japan that's enabled this to happen. We don't exactly know what the calculus is there.
Other thing I'd say is that because there's such a heavy price investment in making these games, naturally speaking, you tend to wait as a publisher until A, the platform's established, and B, you have a feel for what kind of games are successful there.
Yeah, so which has always been the case with Dragon Quest as well. Hasn't it? You know, those games have not come that early in the cycle, and it's always been a case of, okay, this platform is clearly the winner this time around in Japan. This is where it's going, you know, and very much, you know, that was the case with DS. You know, Dragon Quest IX did not come along until, you know, pretty far into that system's life, which was, you know, long and very prosperous. And of course, now we're going to see Dragon Quest XI is going to come, you know, presumably really late in the 3DS's life.
Right. Atlus, I think, discovered pretty early on that there was kind of a craving for RPGs on the 3DS. They released Etrian Odyssey 4, I think, about 9 months after it came out in Japan.
Right.
And I think that's the longest we've waited for a localization. After that, when Etrian Odyssey 4 became the best-selling one in the series, we never had to wait that long. Like,
the two untold games, Mystery Dungeon crossover. Right. Like, I mean,
Persona Q.
Yeah. So all those would come out maybe like within 6 months they came out in Japan.
We made a joke. I don't remember if it was with you guys or with some other media people I've spoken with, that there's a robot that produces Etrian Odyssey games. Yeah. And it just goes. Because there was a stretch there where it was like, we got one every 6 months. Hmm. And you just thought, Atlus, stop, please. Please stop. I can't do this anymore. Like, well, no, here comes Untold Girl 3. You're like, no, stop.
So this is in the eye of the beholder, you know, in terms of when Ben talks about large releases, until Bravely Default. But I mean, was Shin Megami Tensei 4 before Bravely Default?
Oh yeah.
That took a long time to get to us because it was the sequel version and not Bravely Default.
But remember, it was just slightly later than Fire Emblem Awakening because they tied the two together.
They did, that's right, yeah, in the States anyway.
Because Fire Emblem Awakening had blown the doors off and like, well, we want to bring this Shin Megami Tensei thing over because secretly we're planning this completely fucking mental pop idol game.
Yeah, like the Shin Megami Tensei 4 came out in July in North America and July 2013 in North America, May 2013 in Japan. So we waited maybe 2 months.
Which is great.
And that's pretty major, I think, in this realm.
No, it's definitely it's big. It's big. Maybe it's not as big for people who have traditionally played RPGs on Nintendo consoles.
Right.
I think that Atlus has made a name for themselves mostly on the PlayStation 2. PlayStation 2 is when they kind of decided to go with more mass market appeal with their games. They became more they made their games more approachable in general, starting with PS2 generation. And those games, of course, didn't come out on GameCube, didn't come out on Wii. So I think that a lot of Sony gamers really love the Shin Megami Tensei, different franchises. And so as a Nintendo gamer, you look at that and, well, that's not Final Fantasy. That's not Dragon Quest. So it's not major, but it is.
Yeah. I think there is definitely been some waves and crests, you know, crests and valleys on the 3DS in terms of JRPG load. So there's definitely a wave coming right now that we are in the midst of, and it's going to roll through next year. If you're in Europe, it's actually kind of hitting next year.
Yeah, yeah.
Of just complete nonsense. Of just like, here's 5 JRPGs this month. Have fun.
It's hard to imagine that there won't be, you know, some pretty serious cannibalization, you know, because as we've talked about, by definition, you know, these games are big time sinks. I mean, it really does consume your ability to do other stuff in that, you know, area of your life, you know. Yeah. So and that's kind of sad. But
maybe a year ago or two, I was lamenting that Square Enix was not bringing their games to the virtual console on the Wii U and the 3DS. And that's one of the reasons. Like, early on would have been the time, I think, to put your old games, like, they're already localized, you've already made money off them, it's kind of free money if you put your
games. I mean, that's it. Well, I mean, to be fair, to Nintendo, obviously they dragged their feet on it for ages and stuff, and but Earthbound, that was good timing. That was the time to put that out on virtual console. Wii U really needed something, and you know, kind of, there's a lot of goodwill associated with that. And all, I mean, that was, presumably other publishers could have done similar things, but
right. So Capcom has put their Breath of Fire games on the Wii U virtual console,
time to ruin the franchise.
Yep. Square Enix is absent because they've decided that the way to go is to port these games to PC and to mobile devices. Yeah. And so they can charge more usually than the virtual console prices. And even though they do have to put more work in some cases, they don't put that much more work in, as we've seen.
In some
with,
cases,
like, the
you're
Final
not
Fantasy.
Sure if they put any work in.
Yeah. Like the Final Fantasy VI, had localization problems. Like, there was, I can't remember exactly, but there was like a search and replace mistake somewhere. I forget the details, but and Final Fantasy VII had this crazy overlay that just isn't suited for mobile. Yeah, I think that Square Enix has been sorely missed this generation. Several RPG developers have shuffle duff this mortal coil. Image Epoch. Is that Image Epoch?
Epoch.
Have just put out Stella Glow, but they're already dead.
And like, its founder is missing, and like, that story's bizarre. Like, go find some time to read that. It's weird and frightening.
Yeah. So yeah, like, a lot has happened between the DS and the 3DS. And I think that a lot of that explains why we just haven't seen that many RPGs early on. And now there's this glut of them because both Nintendo and Square Enix, and presumably Atlus, who haven't announced everything. I'm sure that Shin Megami Tensei 4 Final which is not a new version of Shin Megami Tensei 4, but an all-new game. I'm sure they're going to port that over. So
they are, yes.
Yeah.
So all of that is going to be...
Well, Atlas are the kind of the constant in all this, aren't they?
Right. Yeah. They're the eternal machine.
Yeah. Yeah, but I really, yeah, I guess it, in terms of like why Ben has the perception that he does, I think, yeah, probably Square Enix are mostly to blame.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like how they've handled, you know, where they've put their properties and not bringing over stuff like, not, I mean, not just like Seven, but the Rocket Slime spin-off, the third Rocket Slime game. You know,
that's true.
Dragon Quest, yeah, it seemed like it would have been pretty suitable for that early period where there wasn't a lot to buy on 3DS, but it's I think they're probably the principal kind of people to blame.
And I mean, you can look at what he's calling out, though. You know, Nintendo's dropping 3 Pokemon games on the Virtual Console. Yeah, but they also put out Pokemon X and Y already. Black 2 and White 2 came out contemporaneous with the 3DS. You know, we've already had a Fire Emblem game. Fire Emblem blew up on 3DS, and that's why we're getting 3 effing Fire Emblem games. Because Nintendo's lost their goddamn mind. Yo-Kai Watch blew up in Japan a while ago. It just took a long time for Level 5 to line up enough corporate entities to form the Yo-Kai Alliance.
And the transmedia aspect of that means that if you're gonna try and bring it over in the fullness of it, you know, then you've got to coordinate a lot of different things. And of course, it's not dissimilar to what happened with Pokemon in the 90s. You know, that was what, 3 years?
Yeah.
Or at least two, between, Japan and the West.
And you can't underestimate just how much work localization is. I've never personally localized a game, but my company has done French localization for Ocarina of Time 3D. I think we were working on it before it was announced, and the woman who was in charge of translating it, basically, they gave her a dump of text, and in French, we need context. Like, we have to conjugate verbs. We need to know if the person speaking is male or female. It's important. And there was no info of that sort in what we got. Basically, Nintendo lent us a Wii with a ROM of Ocarina of Time so that she could, you know, play through the game and look it up.
A Wii or a 3DS?
A Wii. Because the 3DS game was not
the virtual console version.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, because the 3DS version wasn't even announced. Like, that's what we were working on.
I hope
so.
They didn't change any text then.
Yes, which of course makes you wonder about games, you know, that haven't necessarily been finished yet. I mean, how are they managing that kind
of thing? Like, how the hell is Project Cross Zone 2 coming out so close to the release of the Japanese game? Because that game's insane.
That is genuinely astonishing.
If you gave me that game to translate, I would go, what? Did I forget the Japanese language? What is this?
But also, like, presumably, like, today, the developers would know to keep certain info to give to the localization team. Mm. But still, like, I was listening to Axe of the Blood God, the usgamer.net RPG podcast, and they were interviewing this woman who localized the Trails in the Sky. There's this whole series of games.
Yeah.
Trails of Cold Steel, or I can't...
Yeah, you're
something
right.
Like
you're
that.
Right. Yes, you're right.
And the game has basically 1.5 times the amount of text that War and Peace has.
Great.
And, like, by the time she was finished with it, like, not the Japanese characters, but, you know, the English text was, like, 1.5 times War and Peace, which is mind-blowing. But also,
get off your ass, Tolstoy!
She was doing the translation, basically, in spreadsheets, which, as a translator, like, blows my mind. Like, we've got way better tools than that, but I suppose that in game development, like, spreadsheets are pretty common, or maybe are easier to plug into your game somehow.
Yeah, I imagine they
it's
are.
It's really not the best way to localize something and to keep track of terminology or keep track of names, and it sounds like a nightmare, really. That explains why Xenoblade Chronicles
still,
X is coming out a year after the Japanese version. And,
that's the thing. I mean, you do get some of these feats of localizations these days that seem really impressive. And I don't know whether that, you know, or just like, you know, they end up coming out close together
Right, and in the two regions, so, but it shouldn't be kind of understated, you know, the role that that still plays even now. Obviously, there's far better protocols and coordination for this sort of stuff.
Right, we talk about Pokemon X2 and Y2 came out in, like, the most countries like at the same time that's ever happened.
No, I mean, that's because right, for years, Pokemon was a game that was several months between it coming out in Japan and coming out anywhere else. And, of course, yeah, now they've harmonized that, and I assume that was a really significant undertaking for them to do it.
Because that means they're basically translating the game as they make it, which is crazy.
But the thing is that you could do that, presumably, for something like Pokemon, because it's this juggernaut, whereas, you know, so again, it's not like, well, Pokemon comes out at the same time, it could be done, so who cares? You know, like, it doesn't necessarily translate for everything else. Now, to go to the Wii U point, we should the other part yes. of Ben's question. I don't think there's that much hope for Wii U, but of course it is getting Xenoblade Chronicles X, so
mm-hmm. Well, it's getting Sharp FE as well,
and it's getting Gen
Even Roku Sharp FE.
To what extent is that like a JRPG as we know them? I don't.
The combat system seems to be like
okay.
So I think the tricky part with that game. When we talk about when we're getting it. So Japan's getting it December. Oh, I think they're getting it December 3rd, 25th, 30th, something like that. like right at the end of the year. So if we get it spring, like, what do you even do when you're bringing that game to the West? Like,
I don't know. It seems like a real challenge.
I think the only thing you can do is you just go like, just translate it to English. Don't even try. Just
put. We're going to release the first two chapters as free to play, and people are going to download the rest of the game.
Maybe that's going to go. I mean, but so you've got those two, and the thing about those two, it should be mentioned to this general point. How long have we been hearing about those?
Oh yeah.
Ages and ages. They've been planned for a very long time. And even, I'm all right, Xenoblade has been out in Japan for quite a while, but, you know, like, just these kinds of projects take a long time to come to fruition. So, again, right. that is a big
part
of this.
And when you shift to console development, it takes even longer because there's much more stuff you have to build. And I would say go look for original RPG development on the other two platforms. Like, you've got some Western RPGs that have come out in this year, but that was really the first we started seeing original development on those platforms. You know, you had The Witcher, you have Fallout, which just came out.
Yeah.
But like, it took a while to get to that point. And those games were obviously in development for a while because they have PC counterparts. All of the stuff on these Nintendo platforms is original development on this hardware, and there's no other platform to back up the release in case that this hardware doesn't do well.
Yeah, now, in terms of, though, that's the point, those projects were kind of conceived a long time ago. I think the difference with Wii U, whereas we normally might see, you know, a sort of a cluster of RPGs at the end of its life, is that, you know, who is queuing up to make those games for
right.
Wii U? You know, after that phase where, you know, those decisions were made to make, you know, Xenoblade Chronicles X and the Shin Megami Tensei Fire Emblem crossover game, you know, who was gonna say, yeah, this looks like a good RPG market, you know, because Wii U, while I guess, you know, probably the install base is still pretty similar to PS4. You know, maybe PS4's about to catch up or something, but.
Oh, no,
you know,
it's well past. PS4 is well past.
It's well past it now, is it? Yeah. But it's not like a huge disparity even at this point. But the point being that in Japan, you know, Wii U is maybe, you know, roundabout, you know, one of the better, you know, console install base if we're just leaving their portables out of it, because the PS4 hasn't done great business there, but, you know, it's still a small install base. It's not how, you know, not where the money is for RPGs. And
right.
It's never going to be because, you know, it's growing at a, you know, sort of a pretty small rate at this point. And of course, the PS4, you know, is getting a version of Dragon Quest 11. And
apparently the NX is as well.
Maybe the NX is, but we still even know exactly what the NX is. So
the best part of being Square Enix doesn't know either. Like, no, we're going to put it on there.
But the game is also coming out on 3DS, which already everyone in Japan owns.
Exactly. That's the point. That is the destination for RPGs in this cycle. I just think there isn't going to be We don't know exactly how long for this world Wii U is, presumably not that long because it just doesn't have that much steam left in it. But, you know, it's not going to see some big cluster of RPGs beyond the two that we've already discussed.
That's going to do it for email this week. You can send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. We've got a lot, but it doesn't mean we don't want more. And keep them topical because that means we have to use them more quickly. On December 5th, I want you parked in front of your electronic internet-connected device. I don't care if it's a phone, I don't care if it's a laptop, because Nintendo World Report is doing its 6th annual Child's Play Charity Live Podcast Telethon Live to support children for Child's Play Live, 6th time. We have a segment on there right off early in the show, so I want you to get there early. We will be doing... John and I will be doing a live recording of Now Playing with Neil on the call, but not allowed to talk. So if you ever wanted to hear what it sounds like to have someone crushed by two people whom he regards as his peers, be there for that.
Kind of feels like it should be a video cast because we won't see like the crimson in his face.
I'm sure you'll hear the whinging. What worries me, so I don't write that segment, John does. I see that segment right, usually as I'm recording it. If he could, he would give it to me word by word as I was reading it. But he can't.
Appearing on a teleprompter.
What worries me is he knows this is happening. And that he is now, I'm worried that he actually left the show so he could start his dark magic. But... you need to be there for that, because I guarantee you, at least two of the three people on that segment will be very uncomfortable. That is going to be starting, we believe, at 11:30 Eastern Standard Time on December 5th. And we are going to run, hopefully, all the way through midnight Eastern Time, December 6th. Why do I say hopefully? Because that's dependent on you, the listeners, and your generosity to support this charity that helps children who are in hospital. So we'd really appreciate your support for this, and the more you give, the more you force me to have to try to wrangle these people to do more segments. John and I have a segment where we're sponsored by a pharmaceutical company. That's all I'm going to say right now. It's weird. But 11:30, December 5th, the full schedule, if it's not on NintendoWorldReport.com right now, when you hear this, will be up very shortly. Neil and I are hammering out the very last details as we record. So... it should be ready. The donations should be up as well. And we look forward to doing this, and we look forward to you listening. If you can't make it live, you'll be able to donate in advance or after the show concludes. We will be putting each hour of the show up on the RFN RSS feed after the show is completed. Not at once, dear God. But maybe one a day, maybe two a day. We'll figure it out. Because we're not going to be recording an episode that week because we'll be exhausted. But next week... Thanksgiving in North America. Happy Thanksgiving, Americans. The rest of you, suck it. We'll be doing a shorter episode, and then we will kick it off towards the holidays. So we will let you know if we're going to miss an episode, but I think the first one we're definitively missing, besides the telethon, is Christmas. But we'll let you know. And on that, that's a lot of plugs and a lot of show notes and a lot of information about the show. On that, we are going to conclude episode 454. I got the number right this time. I only put that in there because I screwed it up three times at the start of the show. Greg, Guillaume.
No, it's staying.
I expected it would. Greg, Guillaume, I want to thank you for toughing this out, unlike someone we know.
Not a problem. We're not quitters.
We're not, I mean, maybe we should be.
We might fall asleep on the call, but we don't quit.
I'm asleep right now. But soothe you as you go off to slumber. We have our credit music for this episode from Stuart Falks via the RFN email alias, rfn@thunderworldreport.com. You can send your suggestions there. It's the Rocket Belt theme from the Super Nintendo Pilot Wings. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.